This morning, HPR's news director Bill Dorman joins us to talk about yesterday's lockdown of our nation's capital on the long view, along with our contributing analyst Neil Milner. You know, Bill, let's start with you. Over your long career, you have covered politics on the Hill. What struck you knowing that those hallowed halls had been overrun?
Yeah, well, I should start with this is sort of back a little ancient history, back in the days of the George H.W. Bush administration as a producer for CNN in Washington and then a business news reporter for CNN in the second term of the Clinton administration. And in both cases, I had a Hill pass and was up at the Capitol quite a bit doing interviews. And this pre-9/11, so that really was an open time in terms of going through and all that, but I've been back since. And the mobility quite restricted. Of course, security a lot tighter since, you know, 9/11 and in following days. But, I was surprised that there was not more preparation for this because you got the Capitol Police. And still, even under the security that they have now, it's set up for people going through, people lining up in an orderly fashion, sort of going through security checks, the metal detectors, and it's funneled. It is not set up for a mob violence situation. What I was surprised at was that the Capitol Police didn't have the planning to call in terms of reinforcements, of planning for this, knowing that there are limits to the security that they have there. And I'm still stunned. And of course, that's many people are talking about that today, and there are going to be ongoing investigations. But that's the immediate one, because in the Capitol building itself, there are few entrances. But again, when you have a mob situation, that's an entirely different state of affairs.
Yeah, I mean, I had my first visit to the nation's capital just a couple of years ago. So, you know, I was all starry-eyed, but I recall all the extra security. But what about you, Neil? I mean, you've probably visited the Capitol.
Well, I haven't visited it for a long time. And, you know, you may have been impressed by how much more security there is than there used to be. But if anybody looked at what was going on yesterday, it was pretty clear that there wasn't much security at all. By the way, the chief of the Capitol Police and the sergeant at arms of the Senate have both resigned. So, and I think it's really important to understand the symbolic dimensions of the race issue here and some really interesting reasons why the debate may have been, why the security may have been related to race. First thing, of course, is that almost any African-American person would say they treat us differently. It turns out, if you look at the research, it's absolutely true. If you look at the right-wing protest and the left-wing protest between early May and late November, someone's done pretty thorough research on it, the right-wing protests were far less likely to be intervened with by law enforcement, and when they were, they were much more likely to use violence against black protesters than against white protesters. Most of these black protests were Black Lives Matter. 93% of them involved peaceful protest. And one of the reasons, two reasons for this that we have to put in this context, one of which is that there certainly is a kind of implicit, if not racial, bias among police officers in these kind of things. The other thing is that there is an important overlap between law enforcement and people who belong to these right-wing, extreme right-wing protests. So it's what you see and what is the importance and the significance of what you see. So, yeah. The first thing you probably have to deal with is why there was nobody in front of these buildings. But the second thing is to understand the kind of mindset that played a role in this and the importance of this symbolically to racial justice.
I saw a little video clip of a black officer trying to hold back the crowd, you know, by himself. He was running up the stairwell, and I think he had a pipe or a stick, and I fell for him. I was afraid he was going to get lynched.
Well, you saw valiant white officers, too, and it really isn't the fact of the matter is why were those poor guys in there, or people in there, pretty much by themselves, having to hold this sort of thing back? And I'm saying part of it is strategy and tactics, and part of it is this kind of overall notion about race and who's threatening and who's not.
That's a hugely important point, too, that Neil makes on if you look at the preparations for Black Lives Matter rallies in D.C. and the type of even riot gear preparations that were there on the law enforcement side, the presence that was there. So it's not as if this could not have been, called to action to have that in place. But the contrast was just blinding in terms of what...
Well, and two things, Bill, to support that, one of which I think people are not sure of, but I've seen it reported in the press, one of which is that the National Guard had some fairly specific orders to stand down on this one early on in preparation. The second one, and I read this at a reputable source, said that it was Mike Pence who ultimately called out the National Guard rather than Trump. How he was able to do that, I don't know. It may suggest something about the craziness and weird stuff that's going on in the White House. So if you watch the response, and God knows none of us are law enforcement or are tactical specialists here, but if you watch the response, and especially if you listen to the ex-police chief of the Washington, D.C. Police Department, the Metropolitan Police Department, you had to see that there wasn't anybody there early on who could do anything about it. The reporters were talking about it because they were frightened.
I was stunned, too, to hear that, as far as, the violence or to have something like this happen, this was the first incident in a very long time.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake, however, to focus just on the law enforcement thing here, because this is obviously a much broader issue. And let me say something about complicity here. I have a piece today in Civil Beat about polarization that I wrote well before this happened. And it's a little nerdy and historical, but it tries to deal with how you bring about change in a sort of even-handed way. But I think it's important to understand the degree, the breadth of complicity in this whole business on the part of people who identify as Republicans, all the way from Republican voters through, of course, Trump himself. Let's start by saying Trump is the catalyst, and we don't want to get away from this. But if you go back to the Hawaii Republican Party here, that initially when Donald Trump ran for office said he's too nice, that we're too nice for him here. This party has become Trump supported. The day after the presidential election, the Wahoo Republican Party sent an email out saying the national election was stolen and we're raising money for Trump. So it started right there. You had a large number of Republicans who didn't believe in the election. You had a Republican who ran for Congress here who says, there's no data to support that that Trump actually won, but I know he did in my heart. And then you have the Republican elites that all the way along the line have either made excuses for Trump or have actively supported him in terms of the election. So the important thing, I think, to understand, that people have to understand, is how much polarization in this country, how strong it is, and how much it's based on what party you identify with. In this case, I want to and that's equally strong, but in this case, I want to show what kind of road that leads you down.
Well, for the record, we did reach out to Shireen Ostrov and the Republican Party headquarters for comment, and we did not get a call back. But, Bill, you want to talk about just the historical context?
Well, I was going to ask Neil what happens to the energy that represents within the Republican Party, because there are clearly folks that were supportive of that. And, there was talk previous to this of how Trump could be kingmaker role or whatever after he leaves office. What happens to the energy of people motivated by that after this event?
Well, I think that's an open question. I mean, from a political standpoint, which is how most of the people who are the elites that supported Trump see it, I think the defeat of the Republican senator candidates in Georgia is more important than what you saw yesterday in terms of changing the mind of the Republican Party. I think it's an open question whether the party changes very much for two reasons. One, a general reason: parties don't change that quickly. The Democratic Party, it took them years to move away from the kind of racism of the South. Parties don't change that quickly. Secondly, you have 74 million voters who voted for Trump. If you think that that automatically is going to bring some kind of change that may threaten that base, that's naive. So when you listen to Josh Hawley and you listen to these other senators pontificate about the electoral process and miss the fact about the courts, that has something to do with it. So I'm saying it's an open question whether the Republican Party will change. Too early now, a lot of emotion. But once the emotion goes away, that doesn't mean that change is going to happen.
Anything else you want to add, Bill, just about the historical the context of this? We hadn't seen this since the 1800s, I think, right?
Yeah, the British came to town and burned during the War of 1812 and 1814. So the capital was still being built, and the British burned it. But, it had not been breached since then.
Yeah, stunning visuals that are burned in my mind. But thank you so much. Thanks so much, Neil.
Sure.
We have been talking about the process of democracy with Neil Milner, retired professor of political science and contributing editor of our segment, The Long View. News director Bill Dorman will stay with us to give us an update on Hawaii's latest vaccine plan.